These days, deals aren't made over coffee, but instead by sliding into DMs on social media. At least that was the case for writers Kimberly Drew and Jenna Wortham.
Our entire relationship began with a DM exchange, as you mentioned. I reached out. I was a huge fan of Kimberly's Tumblr and just said, you know, do you want to work on something together? And Kimberly was just incredibly gracious and generous, said yes. We had lunch, and that's really how it began.
Today, they're celebrating the publication of their new book, Black Futures. It's the first of a series of books and archives for the future. And like all archives, there's a mix of everything. Photographs, poems, recipes, social media posts, and music playlists that perhaps our children and great-grandchildren will listen to understand this moment, like Frank Ocean's Pink and White.
That's the way every day goes, every time we've no control. If the sky is pink and white, if the ground is black and yellow, it's the same way.
Joining me now are the editors and curators of Black Futures. Kimberly Drew is a writer, curator, and creator of the Tumblr blog Black Contemporary Art. And Jenna Wortham is a staff writer with the New York Times Magazine. She's also the co-host of the podcast Still Processing. Thank you both for joining us.
We're so happy to be with you today.
Black Futures is a time capsule where you are both looking to answer, what does it mean to be Black and alive right now? That is such a big question. How did you go about thinking about who and what kinds of narratives and artifacts needed to be included?
I think for us, we really wanted to draw as wide of a range of possibilities together in the book. I don't think for either of us, we set out to make the declaration, this is exactly what it means to be Black and alive right now. What we wanted to do was pull at a few different strings and bring in and incorporate voices on a global scale that could start to answer that question. I think for both of us, we really see this book as a launching off point, hoping to encourage others to think about archival practices and think about what it means to sit together and really revel at our, you know, greatness and our contributions to the culture and really have a forward-thinking outlook on how we all participate.
Jenna, this book is also nonlinear, but there are 10 subheadings that structure it, which include joy and legacy, Black is beautiful and ownership. How did you all come to this structure?
Well, our publisher, Chris Jackson at One World Books, took a look at all the materials we were aggregating and collecting and thought that it might be a useful way to organize the book into these themes. And of course, the themes are they're overlapping and, you know, there are elements of joy that can be part of justice. But it was really just incredible editorial touch to help us, you know, take all the rich materials in the books and not think about them chronologically, but just organizing them into these subheaders. So people have a sense of, you know, these tones and tempos and emotions that they're moving through that we deeply feel throughout the book as well.
Yeah. You know, I'm one of those people who digs into a book and just starts reading it cold without all of the setups and introductions. And one thing I did before I later read your recommendation was that I actually had my phone on hand, as you suggest, to look up a lot of the things I wasn't familiar with. And that turned into a kind of choose your own adventure experience. Was that intentional?
Yes. I think for both of us, we really intended to create something where people felt like they could really come to be nourished. I think we both have had moments in institutions and outside of them where we feel like there's an assumption about how we should move our bodies or the amount of information that we should know before entering into an experience. And I think for both of us in creating this book, we were really interested in creating a volume that could really inform and nourish. And you could take on, you know, maybe 2 pages at a time or 20 pages at a time. But there didn't have to be a particular rhyme or reason through how you flip through the pages.
Jenna, this book also feels like a physical manifestation of digital culture. It's just so visual and nonlinear that it actually feels like I'm clicking through hyperlinks and curating my own experience. But it's also kind of wild to think that this way of consuming media might actually be rudimentary in the future for future generations reading it, or maybe even cool again.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what's remarkable is that, you know, a lot of the materials we archived in the book did come from social media, and it's pretty bonkers that you can see the interface and how much they've changed. So we have these early Facebook posts from Alicia Garza,
yes.
Right? And you can just tell Facebook doesn't look that way anymore. And the same is true of Twitter. And so it is such a time capsule in that way. And I hope that it can be received as such. And yeah, it might feel archaic in the future. And that's kind of cool. Like, I love the idea of somebody stumbling upon it like a shoebox full of mm-hmm. memories of what we were thinking about and what we were hoping for and what was scaring us this year, you know, or I guess in this period of time that we made the book as well.
This is also a blueprint. I mean, Kimberly, there are recipes not just for food, but also how to start an art collection by Aaron Haynes, or how to be naked by Adrienne Marie Brown, how to draw a self-care bath, which I actually did on Sunday, by the way. It's kind of wild to think that 30 to 50 years from now, these recipes, which are so contemporary to our current moment, might actually be artifacts of how we once were.
I know. And that's half the joy of it. I think for both Jen and I, we've been talking a lot about the cookbook as an archive and thinking about how these things get passed down. I had this very funny interaction the other day where I was in a room where people were, you know, of different age groups. And one person mentioned a Rolodex, and seeing the like Gen Zers in the room just completely blank. Like, what could that thing be? But I think about those bits of ways that we collect information. And of course they age, and of course they change and evolve. But with Hopes, you'll be able to take maybe some of the items or the ingredients or even just the intentions in the interest of creating something beautiful in a contemporary moment. I feel like we all take, you know, even with Pierre's cocoa bread recipe in the book, he took a family recipe and made it his own in a completely new and different way. And so I think, you know, as time goes on, hopefully the recipes will continue to be relevant and maybe improved upon by whomever encounters them.
Was there actually a piece that you needed and couldn't imagine the book without?
They're all so vital. I mean, if anything, I feel like we wish we could have stuffed the book with more. You know, I think it's already almost 600 pages. It's such a juicy, thick book. And I really wish we had space for more entries. But everything that's in there feels vital and important, and I can't imagine the book without any of them.
What does it mean for you guys to have this book come out this year, Jenna?
It really feels like a testament to existence. Everything about this year has felt really amorphous and ephemeral and hard to clutch onto. Like, I feel like I'm scrambling for purchase. Like, where are we? What year is it even? Mm-hmm. Why does everything feel so upside down? And there's something, it's the opposite of abstract to hold a physical book in your hands. You know, this is something that we made because we wanted it to be passed around. We wanted people to sit with it. We wanted people to lose themselves in it, and in a way that's not distressing. And I think that so much of the abstractness of this year has been distressing in some ways. And so it feels really important to put out an offering into the world that seems comforting and seems invigorating, and also just seems concrete.
Concrete, but also a beginning. I mean, this is the beginning of an archive. You just started this. I know you guys just published this book and you're riding high on this, but what's next for Black Futures?
The future of Black Futures is with our audience, is with the readers, is with the listeners to the audiobook, is with the people who want to remix the recipes, is with the people who maybe want to sit down with their friends and record their conversations. It's with the people who really put pen to paper on those essays that they've been dreaming about, and there might not be a location for, but it is completely worthy of being written. That's the future of Black Futures. And I think it's just now a matter to see what happens. And I hold hope that some beautiful things might be born.
Thank you both for joining us, Kimberly Drew and Jenna Wortham, editors of the new book, Black Futures.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And let's end with a selection listed in this book catalog. Here's Sonia Sanchez. She's a poet and leader of the Black Arts Movement, reading her poem, Black Magic.
And so I say to you, Black people, we ought to start a 5-year plan of kissing ourselves, just jumping back and kissing ourselves, and then we're going to believe that we've been bad for a long time, and we're going to get badder. The first set I'm going to do is love poems of a Black woman for her man, and the poem I want to do is called Black Magic. Magic, my man, is you turning my body into a thousand smiles. Black magic is your touch, making me breathe. Yeah.